Hello, everyone. As you can tell, I'm sure, if you've been following my series at all, this video looks quite different. The reason is that I'm doing something a little different today. Normally, I'm seated on the ordination platform at the altar in front of the Gohonzon. Today, though, I want to focus on Buddhist meditation. Because everything I teach is based on the ultimate final teachings of Buddha, what I'm going to teach includes all of the five phases of Buddha's teachings, all of the over 50 years of his teachings, all the way to the final 8 years of his teaching, where he really came back around to the beginning, which nobody understood when he was enlightened and he tried to teach that. He only did that for about 21 days and then quit and started these different phases to get people up to the capacity to understand not only what enlightenment is, awakening is, but how to get there. And it isn't until the final teaching that he made it clear that we all have and are no different than the Buddha. The Buddha actually is a life condition, not a human being. It's a life condition that we all possess. It's a life condition from which all life comes and which all life returns to. It's a quiescent energy. The Japanese call it Ku, the Chinese call it Wu Ji. We've talked about these concepts if you've followed any of my videos or read any of my books. So what I want to drill down into today is very, very important to understand. And when you understand it, you will then understand how the Gohonzon works and how we use the five characters of Myo Ho Renge Kyo as representations of a lot of study and knowledge, which we resolve our mindset to. This is very much a mind training to open our perception and understand reality as it truly is for everything, instead of being confused by misinformation, illusions that we have about what we see and what we think about what we see. So meditation, whether it's Buddhist or not, usually deals a lot with relaxation of the body and an equanimity of sorts. I would say 90%, and I know that's a bold statement, but I would say 90%, if not more, of meditation practice is woefully incomplete, which explains why most people who practice it for some time drop out. Even if they practice it for years, they never seem to progress, other than maybe they feel a little calmer. And, you know, it has these side effects of making life, it gives you some composure, it gives you some resting time, some time to think. Everybody uses meditation in a different way. But real meditation, meditation for enlightenment, Buddhist meditation, if you really want to understand meditation, you know, Buddha explained it very early on. I mean, first thing he taught is there can be no Buddhism without study. You have to study to understand these concepts. If you don't understand the concepts, then it's empty. It's just ritual, okay? And he very clearly, if you've read any of the sutras or teachings, whatever word you'd like to use, is very down to the minutia, granular level. This is what it looks like to practice correctly. This is what it looks like to meditate correctly. There's a lot of treatises in there, like on breathing, that have you doing a million different exercises to breathe through the nose, the right nose, the left nose, breathe out this way, then that way, and calm it up. Buddha didn't do that. That's not the kind of granularity I'm talking about. Buddha just said breathe, but be aware. Everything about Buddhism is awareness, perception. Be aware if you're breathing quickly, that you're breathing quickly. Be aware that if you're breathing deeply, you're breathing deeply. this kind of thing. He didn't say, stick your tongue here, blow out this way. Did not. That's silliness. That's New Age stuff. Make you feel like you're doing something magical. There's no magic in Buddhism. No magic. Okay? This is very strict training, and that makes it incredibly simple and incredibly difficult at the same time, because you have to be disciplined. This is why the followers of Buddhism were called disciples, not followers, right? Because they chose this discipline. All right, so let me get right into it. And the first thing we're going to go over is the nine consciousnesses. Now, right away, some of you might be having trouble with that, because in the early phases, before the final phase of Buddhism, it was taught there were eight consciousnesses, and that the final one, the Buddha conscious, was something you just didn't experience as a human being. But as I clarified before, the final teaching of Buddha was that, hey, Buddhism's here and now. It's in you, through you, you're in it. The Big Bang, the universe has exploded into Buddhahood. Buddhahood, Buddha intellect, is the potential of its non-differentiation. It's the quiescent energy that has no form. It only begins to take form when motive force is applied to it. That leads to the chain reaction. That is karma. And that karma is developed to eventually instantiate a form. All of it predicates a desire to be, a craving. So if we want to understand the Buddha nature in and around us, the enlightenment we already have, we need to awaken that knowledge, the fundament. What is it? How does our mind learn to perceive the truth that it is from quiescent energy that we exist and that we return to? Not why. We don't care about why as Buddhists, because that's an illusion. It's so temporal, ephemeral. It's a temporary thought we have. Whys don't matter. If anything, any big why that you might have will be answered when you understand how. You'll just know. Okay? So, the ninth consciousness that everything comes from, I'm going to put it down here as everything below this wavy line. Now, I hope you can see that. And that's one thing I got to say right ahead of time. I'm going to try different colors here. But if the sound or the video on all of these videos, not just this one, as I do them, is making it hard for you to follow along or hear me, please say so in the comments. Otherwise, I won't know. So let me know, and I'll do something about it. I'll get microphones. I'll do something. Okay? Promise. Let me find a pen here that really puts that on line. Okay. I'm making it wavy because we don't know what this energy looks like. And I'm going to say, this is interminable. Goes forever this way, forever that way. This is the Amala consciousness. Or, if you will, in the Pali text, it's called the discernment. But what is the job? What is discernment? It's a rudiment, it's consciousness. A consciousness cannot exist without discernment, without being able to understand the differentiation. Okay, so in the Amala consciousness, the discernment is zero, because here we have let me put it in the box. Indifferentiation. Everything is one. This is where the oneness of Buddhism comes from. Indifferentiation. Okay? This is the ninth consciousness. Okay? Now, when pressures, formations, subtle events happen in that energy, causal chains begin to happen. And if there's not enough motive force put behind them, they just reacquiesce before they become anything. I've talked at length about this in other videos, so I'm not going to do it here. But the causal, for the sake of this drawing, that those chain reactions, they grow right on the surface and they rise. They rise and they combine with one another and they rise into, and this has a box around it. Why? Because it's not eternal. When they rise within a particular context. They have certain tendencies, and those tendencies exist in certain conditions to begin with and rise into other conditions as they combine. This next level is the Alaya discernment or consciousness. In the Alaya consciousness, what's happening here are the, I may make this a messy drawing, but I hope you can hear me. These are your causal chains. Study the Nidana and you'll understand causal chains. The Nidana has 12 basic parts to a causal chain, but don't understand it as that's, it only takes that to go from here to life. It's an example, a parameter of billions and billions of causal chains that all get together to then amalgamate, right? You'll hear that and you'll read that in the teachings, to create what? Vasubandhu called them, Nagarjuna called them, the aggregates. So the five aggregates are formed in this consciousness. Okay, and as that forms, the next step happens, the next consciousness that's built on top of the Alaya, which is, by the way, the eight. The next consciousness is divided in two. So I'm going to put a diagonal through. The first thing that's created is your epistemology. What's epistemology? Another way of looking at it is, this is where your attachments really manifest as individual avarice for a particular instantiation of tree, of a blade of grass, of a fish, of you, of anything in the current of life. This is where the aggregates define the craving and the desire to be a certain thing with all of these other parts in it. Okay, things start to narrow down from a human standpoint, an identity. Okay, the other part of this, and they're both called mano. This is the mano, and this is the mano. Both of them, that's why I put them in one box. There are two different types. It's the sixth and the seventh consciousness. Okay. And the first one is in Pali, it's called, they're both called mano. The one is your foundation for your worldview, your basic building blocks of what you think of as knowledge. You know this. And you'll understand it better when I give you the other side of it, is your causal mind. Okay, both of these are the human mind. But there's part of the human mind that has a certain kind of hard written, although it can change, but hard written set of operating manuals for, you know, how to eat, how my heart beats, my, all of these things that are kind of intrinsic, automatic. And then there's part of that mind that is the current purveyor of information and perception to understand group, parameterize, recognize patterns because of the epistemology, recognize patterns in the outside, quote unquote, world, make sense of it and make conscious, what we call conscious, decisions. So this is, we'll call it the causal mind, or the causal human mind. This is what we're going to work with meditation right here, okay? Because that's where our perceptive center is. And that's what we need to work on, okay? Above this are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Sight, hearing, smell, taste, sight, hearing, smell, taste, touch. These are all consciousnesses. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and 7 are the human mind. 8 is our storehouse of causal chains that are grouped together as amalgamates and aggregates. And they all came from quiescent energy, which is no beginning, no end. You notice I put these in boxes because these boxes represent a human lifetime. Or the lifetime of anything, an oak tree, all right? It has these things too. It's just that many parts here are developed very, very, very subtly, not to the degree of a human eyeball, but it senses the seasons. It senses oxygen. It has a rudimentary sense of smell, a rudimentary sense of taste in that it has to ingest things. And so it's, you know, life is mysterious in some ways, but really it all works the same. All right. So in meditation, we try to use this aspect, these two consciousnesses, in order to help us understand the truth. All right. Much meditation practice today uses only half of this and focuses on these and tries to, by focusing on these and embracing them and loving them or allowing them to be or whatever New Age rhetoric you want to put around them. Tries to accomplish some kind of a calmness to then be able to penetrate our epistemology and somehow in this area believe that they can perceive or see what they would call emptiness. And I'll grant you some Hinayana Buddhists will go all the way to this stage, the eighth stage. And if they get there, they believe that's as far as they can get. That's That's where you meet arhats, people who claim that by understanding the aggregates and the causal chains, that they can release their anger. They're no longer affected by things. They're still though cannot achieve bodhisattva or Buddhahood, because those are realms outside this lifetimes, which is absolutely wrong, because this amala consciousness exists throughout all of these. It's in all of those. None of them would exist if it weren't. This is the energy that created them. You can't. Einstein would roll around in confusion if he saw what most, not just meditation, but Buddhist meditation does. They deny the relationship of energy and matter. E equals MC squared. All energy, all matter is energy in some form. You can't have matter without energy. And all matter at some point reduces to energy. This is Buddha's diagram, that everything is energy. With causal chains, we can group together certain forms that we can change the form of energy in certain ways to create other things, but they're all temporary. They're all going to end up back here. These are all name and form, nama rupa. It's in the Nidana. It's in the early teachings, but nobody got it. Okay? Now, what we do in Buddhist meditation started out as contemplation of these consciousnesses, and the idea is to take apart these causal chains, to quiet them down to the point where they don't exist anymore. Because the reason that all of this, as Buddha said, the first noble truth, life is suffering. Why? It's because of these causal chains that all arose from the amala consciousness. All our monkeys, the monkey mind. So he doesn't just want to embrace the monkeys and say, you're okay, we're okay. Because the we're okay, you're okay is the ego. It's right here, ego. So if that's the depth of our meditation, I got a surprise for you. You're existing from here up, and you're never escaping your human suffering. You may feel better about it, but you're not changing anything. In order to be awakened to your already present Buddha nature, you must quell the thoughts. Here's a way to think about it. We get stuck on words, and it's easy to get stuck on words. When you're meditating and you are aware of a thought arising, our human nature is so geared to thingness that we actually try to negotiate with the thought. And I don't care what your negotiation is. Your negotiation might be go away, which would be probably the best negotiation out of all of them. But there's all variations. Embrace it, let it go. What do these things mean? Okay, anyone who's been in a bad relationship will tell you that the best way to let somebody go isn't to think about them. Isn't move on. That's how you let go. So in Buddhist meditation, when we encounter a thought arising, we don't think, what's that thought? I mean, it may come up fully developed in your brain, at which point you have no choice. It exists. It's your thought. Okay, I see you. That's fine. But then your mind needs to focus on, how did that thought arise? Where did it come from? You see, now I'm not thinking about the thought. I've already cast it aside. I'm trying to think, why now? Not why, sorry, my mistake. How? Because why is just going to blow up a thousand more thoughts, and there we are in our wonderful ego trying to mastermind the world, and our, and oh, we're so enlightened because we have all these thoughts and we know that they exist, and oh, we're so wonderful. That's not it. We need to think about not thinking and how the thinking arises. Now, I don't blame you for feeling a little confused. That is hard. And you may practice meditation for a very long time. If you don't work consistently in your meditation on seeing the how, you'll feel it. You'll feel it physically, believe me. I don't know if we all feel it the same, but I know how I feel it. I get a little sense of loss. I get a little sense of being in a space I've never been in before. I'm not frightened. I'm just aware that I'm looking at a place that I'm not used to looking at. And as soon as I perceive that I'm not having the thought, of course, the thought arises. So I keep working on keeping that length of time in the other place longer. Now, what, in terms of Buddhism, what's happening when you're doing that with your mind is that as soon as a thought, a causal chain appears, a thought appears into your mind, you circumvent it and you start looking for the causal chain. You may sometimes see a causal chain, go, I know where that thought came from. Then immediately, as soon as you know that, laugh it off and look for how that arose. Constantly try to throw away thoughts. Just throw it out. But don't just throw it out willy-nilly. Ask yourself the new question. Move on. Where'd you come from? How'd you become that? I don't need even know to know how much of that is. It's a thought. And in Buddha's teaching on meditation, the words he used was calm, the formation of the body. That body isn't this body. It's not this flesh and blood. The thought is a body. It's a manifestation. Calm, the formation, the process, the coming of the. See, that's what is always so often missed in proper meditation. It's not trying to be nothing. It's not trying to get rid of this body. It's trying to get rid of the process that creates the thing to begin with. And that process is always craving. Because that's how the causal chains work. That's how the 12 Nidana work. From very subtle reaction come a recognition of reaction, come a, hey, I'm reacting, to the I. How do I be? It's just a massive chain explosion of craving. That's what created this entire universe. Without it, you wouldn't be here. To make you, we first had to make the, and we had to make the universe. Yes, we. All of us eyes, which don't really exist, are really an amalgam, a huge amalgam of craving what it's like to be sentient. You and I created this universe. I can talk on that for a few hours. So let's get back to meditation. This is a ton of work. And it could take years, could take a lifetime. Some people could get there this way, meditating this way, and get to Buddhahood. They could. Not all of us. So the final 8 years of Buddha's teachings was, hey, there's a simple way to do this. There's a law. The way all of this works is a law, like gravity is a law. You can't deny gravity, it exists. It doesn't exist in the Amala consciousness, but it exists in the process of life. How? How do we do it? What's the easy way? This might get a little messy here. Maybe I should use a different color. I'm afraid to use a different color because I'm afraid you won't be able to see it. Remember the characters Myo, Ho, Renge, Kyo? I just did a video on them. This is the purpose of the mandala, as a mirror for our mind. The mandala is nothing. The paper, the characters, they're really nothing. They're only representations of something. Now watch this. The Amala consciousness, the knife consciousness. I'm gonna clean this board a little bit. Well, you know these are 1 through 9. You can diagram that on your own. Myo. Can you see this okay? Myo, the characters, the Sanskrit characters, the Japanese, Chinese characters for Myo represent this Amala consciousness. And the way, not just the consciousness itself, but the way it leads into the aggregates, which is Ho, into an instantiation of a human, Ren, that gives you all of your earthly senses, Yay. And when your life comes to an end, which I don't have as a consciousness, but let's just put it up here as eventually you get to lose this body, this death. Your understanding of this path is Kyo, which immediately sends you back to Amala. This is known as a circular thing. A mandala is a circular thing. The teaching of the Lotus Sutra is a circular thing. The teaching of the Avatamsaka Sutra, when he was first enlightened, through all the rest of the 5 stages to get you back to what he was meaning to say, and getting to it in the last 8 years of his life to finally get you back to the beginning, is a circle. The Lotus Sutra is the only sutra that is a circular teaching. When we chant Myo Ho Renge Kyo, we are invoking our Buddha knowledge, our Buddha intellect, Buddha. What happens then when we chant Myo Ho Renge Kyo is we travel from top to bottom through all of these consciousnesses directly. Are we stuck here? Not anymore. We don't sit here and contemplate what emptiness might be. We don't embrace anything. We don't try to understand how the causal chains are working. We don't try to dissect any of this. We simply invoke our Buddha intellect. And because we do, it sifts through all of the causal chains, all of them, every one, every aggregate, every epistemological ego thought, It just cleanses, it's like a major car wash. It just comes through and cleans the sidewalk. Straight through to your Buddha intellect and all the way to your fingers and toes and manifestations. Because your Buddha intellect is in all of these, is in fact the original energy from which all of these come from, and which is still there creating them moment to moment, making them exist, and giving you the perception of a linear lifetime. But you are not a linear thing. You are a moment to moment, like dots creating a line. You are just a location. And this process is happening hundreds of thousands of times a moment. In fact, Qi Yi Tendai in the 6th century China knew then the power of Myoho Renge Kyo and described from the teachings, what he perceived from the teachings, that what happened in each moment of life, let me get rid of this. Each of these phenomena that we've been talking about, this is interesting. And I'll let you study the other videotapes and do some reading on your own on each, again, Ichinin Sanzen, the 3,000 realms. I'm just going to make quick reference to that. We constantly, as human beings in our human mind, are traveling through the 10 worlds of life condition, which have the 10 worlds of life condition within each one. In the three realms that we exist. So we have 10 worlds times 10 worlds because they're within each other, the Buddhahood of hell, the hunger of animality, so on and so forth. That's 100 different conditions we can experience. We experience them through the 10 factors. The factors are appearance, cause, latent effect, power, volition, consistency from beginning to end, another circle. It's in the recitation. So times 10, oops. So times 10 gives us 1,000. And then we have the three realms of existence. And you can look that up. I have that on the website. You can download that and understand what consists of the three realms. And that gives you 3,000. What Tendai showed in Buddha's teachings was that those discrete moments that we instantiate, we're constantly instantiating. We experience all of those 3,000 realms, all the worlds, all the factors, and in the three realms of life, in each one of those moments. Our human mind perceives this and transposes it to the next moment. And again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again, and again. So that what we really are doing is, when the first one is, that's birth. The next moment is rebirth. Aha! You can say that between this moment and that moment, you could call it a death, but it's not really a death. it's just a momentary lapse between births, between the instantiations of all of the things that make us us. So it's not really a death. The death is when this moment to moment to moment ends. Okay, that's death. This is birth. And every moment in between is rebirth. That's how to understand what Buddha was saying. And what he's saying is, if you can chant Nam-myoho Renge Kyo during this process, you can shift the in-between. That's how you can change your life from whatever it was here to something of life in this human form with the wisdom of Buddha. What is the wisdom of Buddha? The Amala, the quiescent energy. We can live with that wisdom while still being human, because that wisdom is in each moment. Twice. We just need to awaken it. Is it starting to make sense? It all works together. It wasn't until Nichiren that Nichiren realized, wow, you know, all we need to do, when you read the Lotus Sutra, the name of the sutra is Myoho Renge Kyo. The name of each chapter is Myoho Renge Kyo. How many more ways could Buddha say, look, this is the law, Myoho Renge Kyo. Just do that. Says it over and over again. Not just Nichiren's, but the Lotus Sutra says it. The Nirvana Sutra said it. Repeat, focus on the law. Investigate for yourself. This is a self-motivated practice. Don't believe me because I said it. Research it. Find your own way to this understanding. You'll get there because this is the way it is. You just, you know, I'm French Canadian, across Canada, down into California, in this Bay Area, moved to Wyoming, worked in Petrochem, worked as an actor, worked in as a DJ. I've had many different languages and experiences in life, so the way I'm going to describe something to you is going to be from my epistemology and my perception, but also almost 30 years of chanting. So that doesn't mean I can explain it any better than you can if you investigate it on your own, but what it does mean is that I can tell you it. I have my own proof. I know this works. I know because I quit it for a while and I came right back to things I'd forgotten I was. Certain personality traits that I thought, oh yeah, I used to be like this. Scared the crap out of me. It took a lot of that though. I was stubborn to get me practicing assiduously again. Yeah, I took a break. I got tired. I wasn't seeing the benefit. When you first start, you see a lot of benefit because a lot of stuff is superficial that you've created in this life. So that's the first stuff that goes and you see it. But then you start working on deeper stuff, your epistemology that you're not constantly aware of. And you're not sure if things are changing and you can feel doubt. That's why I don't give out that singular Gohonzon with just the Daimoku on it until you've practiced at least 10 years. Because it's going to take that long before you're solid. You're going to have an experience that's going to be actual proof in your life that you may not be able to explain to others, but you'll know. You'll have the Buddha wisdom will be operating in you at some level. And that becomes the quest for the rest of your life because your life just keeps ameliorating. Things become easier to do. Obstacles will still arise, but you seem to get through them with a comfortable ease, like there's a knowing about you that this will work out. I don't have to worry. It's an incredible mind, knowing that. And and I'm still human because all I want is more. Still greedy. Anyway, I hope all of this scribbling made some sense to you. It was a tool for me to talk to you. I hope the audio is okay. I'm a little further away from the mic than I usually am. Again, please let me know. And hopefully this brought up a bunch of questions for you to ask me. That would be great, because that would mean you're listening, and that would mean that I'm still human, because I can't explain everything all at once. It's just, it can get pretty convoluted. But I hope you saw, I mixed several streams of teaching together here so that you could start to see how the truth resonates throughout Buddha's teachings. But you have to take all of the teachings. You can't just pick some and go, okay, that's all I need. Maybe it is all you need. Maybe you're the one in 10 trillion who can get to Buddhahood that way. I won't deny you that. Buddha even said it. But he also said that after 2,500 years past his leaving this earthly body, entering nirvana, dying, that the capacity of the people of this time will be devastatingly muddied by distractions, diversions, avarice of a humankind, not just causal chain kind. And gosh, look at the world around us. Oh my. It's unfathomable how much greed and craziness and positioning is going on right now. So for us to be able to focus on the kind of meditation that he described in the first, second, third period of Buddhism, we'd never reach Buddhahood. So in a way, they're right. You'd never reach Buddhahood. But with a tool like this perfect mirror of the drama of being human in the Gohonzon, every aspect of the 10 worlds in the Gohonzon, with the law of Myoho Renge Kyo to understand how we instantiate as a human, our perception can deepen much more quickly because we have undefiled, undistracting information here to mirror that which is already in us. Not something to be given to us, not something for us to go through trials and tribulations and a gauntlet to get to. It's already here. The only obstacle we have is our own mind, our ego. And that is appropriate Buddhist meditation, whether you use the Butsudan or the Gohonzon or not. I don't know why you wouldn't, because it's like the gift from Buddha. But I guess if you want to do it the hard way, more power to you, my friend. I hope to see you. I hope you come visit me. But at least keep watching my videos. Please make comments. Email me. Go look at my website, threefoldlotus.com. Tons of information and resources there you can print out for free. All the basic concepts from different schools of thought so you can make up your own mind. I don't want to tell you what to think. You need to figure out what to think. But here's how. Remember? That's all we care about as Buddhists. How? I feel a tremendous energy from you and a responsibility to you. And I care very deeply that you take this practice seriously. It will change your life. All right. I'm going to stop this thing. Thank you.